my favorite caves, my podcast. I always like it. Pod is just something enveloping, like when you're growing as an embryo or something, or you're in a nest as a bird and you feel kind of safe or a cave. Again, I'm not a person who loves isolation from people. I don't like to stand in crowds and be in crowds. I said I grew up in New York City and I was in all the boroughs. I never stood on lines for things. Wasn't my nature. I'm too antsy about wanting to get something done, so standing in line was never my thing. And this goes way back. But I want to thank you all because I've noticed in the last couple of weeks, I guess, if nothing else, whether I've become a little more popular or you guys are sharing it a little more, I have more shares and more views. But then again, you got to find something to do. So I also had more time to talk to my phone and make little notes, and wow. So if I start moving a little fast, send in any questions you've got. Again, it's just let me do it at the beginning so I don't forget during. But it's AE, the word equals, and then MCSQ at gmail.com, and then Facebook.com. On that, I'm at AE, the word equals, and MC, and the word squared. Instagram, it's the same thing. I'm AE equals MC, and the word squared. So, got a lot of stuff to cover, but there's so much happening out there. And any one of these topics I could talk forever on, which is, I guess, I don't know if it's a gift or a curse, but here we go. First one that came to mind is there was a book that came out more recently. It's called The Fifth Risk. And the guy who wrote it, his name is Michael Lewis. He's a well-known author, writes books that are more about reality and the rest of it. And he's talking about, of course, the administration and Trump and what happened. One of the cute anecdotes that he has is on the early morning when Donald first got enough electoral votes, but Pennsylvania turned in his favor. Mike Pence, they were all in this room together waiting for the results, and, you know, a bunch of people around. Chris Christie was there. So someone reported this to Mike Lewis when he did his digging and his work. And Mike Pence went to kiss his wife, Karen, who was sitting on the couch, I believe, at the time. And she turned away from him. And she said, and the quote is, "You got what you wanted, Mike. Now leave me alone." She rarely talked or even said hello to Trump. I guess the woman has old line taste and decided she didn't exactly like him as a person. But then again, women feel these things more than men do when they look at men. So The Fifth Risk, look it up. It'll be a good read. Michael Lewis is a very good writer. Next thing, the 2020 census. It's been extended to August 15th. I'm just going to throw this out there. I have nothing that tells me it will happen. But I've noted that I've gotten my census. I could do it online. I've received multiple copies with different numbers on the forms at my home. So some have come to my name, some have come to resident. This tells me that whatever they're doing with the census, they're sending out more forms that people could fill out, and it could be for one of two easy reasons. The simplest one is gonna say, hey, with this virus and people not answering and not being able to canvass, that's why they extended it to August 15th. But let's say they can't canvass every place. You might either get a suppression, you might get more forms filled out for certain areas that they'd like to overcount, or the simplest thing is they're going to say, we find it's not valid, there are too many errors, too many multiple filings, so we're not going to count the things or waste money redoing it. We'll just stick with the results of the 2010 census, which favored the Republican Party. They used it to take over a lot of state and local governments. Just an easy prediction. Next thing on my list, antibodies and testing. I remember when I was a kid in public school, we used to do, I used to like participating. It was kind of interesting to me back in the cave days of technology. You'd take a mic, you'd be tapping it and going, "Testing, testing, testing," and it was all hardwired. Well, testing, 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 that's the byword that's missing here, because it's like we know we have the film Predator, where there's been a series of the film Predator. This alien in Predator could turn invisible as he wanted to or needed to. And that made it harder to deal with him. You had to look for the rustle of the leaves or whatever. So in the Predator films, the pieces I've seen of it, it becomes more interesting dealing with something you can't spot, who's stronger than you and may have more weapons than you do in arrest. But of course, we always triumph in our science fiction movies. But that's what we're dealing with. We've been invaded by an alien. Yeah, I think it's going to bring us together more. We recognize we're all, rich or poor, susceptible to this. You keep seeing these vignettes that are starting to come in of doctors, nurses, everybody. And as I've said, I said it last week already, I'm a veteran. People thank me for my service if they find that out. I don't mind. I thank myself for my service. I love my country, and I continue to serve it in any way I can. That's part of why I do this. I've always said there are people you don't see. I know a lot of people. I'm a washerwoman, a gossip. I like to find out what's going on in my neighborhood or with people. So I'll talk to it later when we hit another subject. But police and fire have always been on the front lines. That's their job. People in administration have to take care of things so we function. When you now see Governor Cuomo, who's been doing his daily briefings, I'll hit him with another word that comes later that's kind of cute. I interacted, not directly as a friend, with his father, who was governor, that was Mario Cuomo. Again, another good immigrant family that came here, and the sons got educated here, both educated in New York, both attorneys, and both serving their government, their country, the people. So, antibodies and testing. On that, if we were able to do more testing, one of the things they've been talking about is when they give you vaccines. I was around before they had the polio vaccine. By the time I was going from junior high school to high school, they had the polio vaccine, and what they did was, as a public service to the country and toward our health and toward lowering the overall cost of government dealing with everybody who was around, people used to be in these old iron lungs and stuff from some of these diseases that happen. So polio was a very difficult disease. And I remember when I had the vaccine, they gave it out publicly in New York City at my high school when I first started it, I believe. And we just came up and they had this big hypodermic, new needles on, and shooting everybody in the arm. So they vaccinated, vaccinated, vaccinated. Again, that's our government spending, as I keep telling you, our money. Because the government, whatever budget they have, they have only the dollars we give them, and then they're allowed to have a deficit and issue more paper. We'll get into that later about why that's not a problem. People misunderstand, but I've been trying to explain to you why we each own one share of America and it's worth around $200,000 each. Then there's a guy, Dr. Robert Gallo. Dr. Robert Gallo is a Maryland-based virologist. He's a bit older, and he was best known for being a co-discoverer when they were trying to figure out what this was that was happening, which ended up being HIV/AIDS. So, because of his being well-known and worldly famous, he was able to leverage his contacts with scientists in China. His connections got him 1,000 coronavirus test kits. It's the president who's got this wonderful relationship with President Xi. They talk, they're great friends. Yeah, right. Anyway, it's like saying, "Yeah, sure, I still talk to my former wife. I treat her really well." Anyway, Dr. Gallo was able to get this stuff, bring it in, do some testing. But it was only 1,000 tests, and we needed several million more at least to do something. Without testing, like that alien who's invisible, you don't know where to shoot, where to go after it, to work with it, to corral it. So again, please remember, look up Dr. Gallo, famous guy, still around. He's done a lot of good stuff for us, like a lot of dedicated researchers that we normally never see. But look at all these people who are out there on cable because they need to talk to someone. And so they have all these remotes, and these doctors generally have good phones or good technical stuff. So they're talking to people all over. You probably never realized how many virologists, epidemiologists, and blah, blah, blah we have. 330 million people. A lot of them are well-educated. A lot of them are out there doing research, which helps us in the long run. Next thing, infrastructure bill. With the three bills that have been passed already, the latest one being the $2 trillion bill, which we'll get to also, they're talking about an infrastructure bill. And we've heard Trump tell us he's the master builder, he's a developer. Look, anybody who can put a fence up that blows over in a 37-mile-an-hour wind, I wouldn't have them change my light bulb. So he is a mastermind, a genius at marketing. The subtitle of my podcast this week, because I've left, what do we have to lose? Because there's always something we could lose, something we may want to lose, something we don't want to lose. So that's why I kept that. The subtitle for this week is The Storyteller in Chief. Donald has known he's lived his whole life where he can wake up this morning or talk to you in the morning and then change what he tells you in the afternoon and deny it, even though we have videos showing him doing it. And now that he's president, he tries to use the DOJ and his leverage to suppress things, including Priorities USA. You could look at it. They've got a commercial out there that's just purely him speaking from the beginning of this thing, telling you, oh, they're only 15 and it's going to go to zero. And then you see the graph growing in front of his face. You hear nothing but his voice. And then he says, oh, we got it under control. It's going to disappear. I've got this. You know, he's the big guy. He knows what he's doing. And at the end, he ends with, oh, no, I take no responsibility for it. What else is new? Next. Interferon. Oh, the infrastructure bill. So now they're talking about another few trillion. I've told you before, and you'll see it when we discuss some of the things that have happened, if I get to them. Donald Trump learned from his father, nobody has to give you money for you to make revenue or put money in your pocket. If they give you control of what is spent. So part of what happened here, Donald refused test kits that China offered. Donald refused test kits that came from the World Health Organization. He wanted to do his own. If he does his own, he goes out and he talks to his buddies. You keep seeing these daily briefings because he can't have his Bund rallies. So these daily briefings that he does, he repeats the name of every CEO of every company that he's been talking to, tell you that he only talks to these people. This is a man of the people, right? Anyway, so he tells you when he gets Abbott Labs, Quest, and all these other labs and the rest of it, if he can make a deal with them saying, hey, I'll direct this toward you, you'll put the test kits together, you're going to remember me. As they've told you, there's something that they used to refer to as mob speak. I grew up in New York City. I know the streets well, and I grew up with people from all backgrounds. They were all my friends. If they were my enemies, they kept away from me. I kept away from them. But, as they said, you don't have to put something in writing. If you look at someone and say, yeah, you knew I did that for you, so just don't forget that when I need something. And that's more blatant than it even is said normally. Because when they do something for you, they make sure you know they did it, you owe them. Anyway, so when he wants to redirect these things, that's why we don't have all these test kits. He's been trying to make his deals. One of the reasons. So, infrastructure bill, he wants to get 3 years, he's built nothing. This is the master builder, except the fence that blew over in 37 mile an hour wind. And he blamed it on the concrete. He can't be wrong. He's not overseeing anything. If it blew over, they didn't do it the way the master builder would have liked it done. So infrastructure bill, if they're going to put out a few trillion dollars to do the things we need in this country, because nobody else did it and he's going to do it. Bottom line is it's money again that if he gives out to the right groups, he knows he's going to get leverage out of it. So I'm not looking forward to the infrastructure bill. But again, just like during the Great Depression, there was a WPA, which was an act that allowed people to go to work and get paid instead of standing on soup lines. He may be able to start projects, but again, you can't have people in big groups depending on what they're doing and the rest. There may be some tasks that we could define that they could go out and do if they've been cleared once we get some testing done and know what's happening with the people we're using. We do not want to kill more Americans just to put money in Donald's pocket. So infrastructure bill, it's funny. 3 years he's done nothing. All of a sudden he's hot on infrastructure. Again, it's a pile of money, cookie jar for him to play with. Interferon, it's a drug, it's an amino acid. My chemistry isn't good enough to explain exactly what it was. But interferon, INTERFERON. There are a bunch of things that deal with the tissues in our body and what amino acids and other things form. But these form when your body tries to fight an invading virus or disease. So what they've been looking at was antibodies and testing, but our body naturally tries to fight. Now, everybody doesn't do the same thing. But when they give you a vaccine, normally they give you a live or dead piece of that virus, whether it's a flu virus on a flu shot or the Salk vaccine for polio. And your body, because this alien thing got inside your envelope called your body, which protects you, your body starts to react to it and build what's called antibodies or immunity. So another testing that they have to do, and they've got all these people that they've been taking blood samples when they're in the hospital or something. Let's make sure that they keep the samples and test them, because if anybody has formed antibodies, we want to look at it and see whether that would help either develop something to fight the virus or use their blood to inject in people who need blood so that they will fight the virus. This is science. This is how it works. This is an oversimplification. Interferon, it was finally discovered technically in 1957. If you look up the drug, it's easier than telling you the doctors and the different ones. It was being worked on simultaneously in different labs around the world, but definitely 57's the date. 77 was more when they understood more about it. It was supposed to be another wonder drug. They're still figuring out how they can use it, but modern science is better at doing these things, so please look up interferon. It's, again, something else that may be used because of how the body creates these things. Lose the storyteller-in-chief. Look, anybody who knows me now is, I don't wish Donald Trump anything bad, but I wish us good, and I don't like a man who really doesn't, not only doesn't understand his job, but uses it for his own benefit and is not doing enough for us. And staffs people, an attorney general is supposed to be independent. He's our attorney general, not his personal attorney. And just the other day, while it's coronavirus, Mitch McConnell was saying, hey, the reason we're not getting other things done is he was distracted by impeachment. Donald Trump already knocked a hole in that, so Mitch trying to defend him, Donald took care of that. But what did he do? Behind the scenes, he set up getting rid of an inspector general that he, Donald Trump, appointed, who's a career person at doing inspector general, who's been respected by people. Why? This is the guy who followed the law when there was the whistleblower that has never been named to all of us publicly, but told Congress he had this. He went strictly by the books. Now that we're all busy and not watching it, here's again Donald taking his vengeance and getting rid of a guy who was a career U.S., servant who served us well. And other inspector generals are really pissed. They're going to investigate it, but he's going to tell you, see, they lost the last time and they're wasting all this time and money. No, we're trying to figure out how to get rid of him because enough of us recognize that he's doing nothing beneficial for us. So I don't wish him ill, I just wish him out. So the storyteller in chief, as I've said many podcasts ago, way before this, he could open up his own little network, even if 10 million of his followers would just pay $10 a month to hear him talk once a day on any topic that he wants to. The man could come off with a simple setup of almost a half a billion dollars a year in revenue if he sets it up right. So I'm not going to cry for him. Next topic I've got, no maintenance of strategic assets and sales to foreign country. They found out that we have our strategic stockpiles, which also included some ventilators. Because of what Donald did in the prior 2 years, getting rid of the whole staff that generally worked on pandemics and research and the rest of it, he didn't maintain. And he's going to tell you, well, it was the prior administration. It's never him. Mommy, I didn't do it. I didn't take the cookies. Yes, I've got it all over my lips, but don't believe your eyes. So, no maintenance of strategic assets. Plus, he sells strategic assets to other countries, things we need, if they're even useful. So, anyway, we'll get to later. You may or may not have heard about it, but Russia sent the supply plane with masks and ventilators and other things that landed in New York. Hopefully, when they offloaded that, it wasn't distributed elsewhere, because Trump, in the last day or two, is basically saying, New York, you're on your own. Die if you have to. Because what he said, excuse me, what he said the other day, he said, well, no, I don't have to supply it. The governors in the states, they should have bought it years ago when it was less expensive. Yeah, spend your budget, because they can't have a deficit at the state and local level. We can get into that on another podcast. I almost wrote my thesis on funding of state and local governments because of with being just one nation. And certain areas do certain things that other areas don't that benefit all of us. We are a country, period. Farmers don't grow and sell to foreign, they sell to us in a lot of cases. Anyway, so maintenance, strategic assets, he basically said, well, New York should find them. He's basically saying, let's see how many people died because you can't figure out how to get any, when he also helped corner the market by FEMA bidding on them. I'm sure everybody, if they've been listening to any kind of news, heard about all the governors are outbidding, the companies are trying to get the biggest number they can. That's the idea of profits. And then FEMA comes in and pays more. Again, he gets his cut from the companies if he buys it at a higher price. Puerto Rico, let's not forget about it. Maybe everybody realized when Puerto Rico got hit by Hurricane Maria 2.5-3 years ago, that they were devastated, the whole island basically. It's not that gigantic, but the hurricane was strong and it devastated Puerto Rico, which never had a great infrastructure in a lot of ways, but that's not their fault. We can always go into discussing how Puerto Rico got to where they are with all the debt they have. Again, I can tell you simply, because I dealt with Puerto Rico close to at least 40 years ago in my career. A lot of major companies went offshore before China even started up, because companies realized that they could go to even Puerto Rico, which is a territory, and have certain beneficial treatments that Puerto Rico could offer them, and they could make more money and actually be in a country that you can fly up and back to America without a passport. Because Trump didn't realize Puerto Ricans were citizens for at least 100 years. So Puerto Rico, and then they've had the earthquakes in the beginning of last year to the middle of last year, a number of them that hit the southern shore. Puerto Rico shows you how this man can't do infrastructure or can't build anything unless he feels like it, unless he's going to put money in his pocket. These are our brothers and sisters, Americans, who have served proportionately higher per capita in our military through a lot of our conflicts in our history than any other place. A disproportionate number of Medal of Honor winners came out of Puerto Rico. Anyway, sense of smell, the next thing that on my list, this is all in random order because I had a lot of items that kept coming up that I kept sticking in my phone so I wouldn't forget them. It seems they've realized, and this is not absolute, but again, without the testing and the rest of the stuff that hasn't been done, we're shooting in the dark, but it seems they've kind of confirmed that one of the early signs of the coronavirus is losing your sense of smell. So I hate to say this, you know, all of us are saying, how do I know when I've got it or what? Maybe it's just I'm a little warm. If you suddenly recognize that you're eating dinner with, you know, your family, you're in the house and you're getting home cooking and, you know, the sauce your mom makes or your wife makes or the meal that you've put together yourself, you're sitting there and you're not smelling anything, I would suggest you at least call your doctor and ask, because it seems that they've realized that one of the early signs of this coronavirus, if it hits you, is loss of sense of smell. And also it seems, which goes with it, is the loss of sense of taste. They're usually together. So, going on, we now get to, well, testing, I said already, if we don't do more, even when we beat this down, we're not going to know where it is and where it can spring up again. We've got to get a better detail on it. And I know we've got 330 plus or minus people in the country, but we've got to get some better testing out there. Even if Trump and his buddies at Abbott Labs puts a machine out there, whatever. We have to get testing going, because if we put it down, when we start roaming around and going out in the streets, let me tell you, it'll be easier to start up again if we don't know what we're dealing with and where. Next thing that hit me was, Trump does a Nixon. Now, Nixon, he was pretty good at keeping people confused with what was going on and denying anything else and blah, 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 blah. He wasn't as great a salesman or marketing person, but he was, from everything I knew, when I went in the military a million years ago, I knew people who knew him when he was in the military. He was a guy who was a gambler. He would always take that edge and look for it. Did it mean he would be one of these people who enjoyed jumping off mountains or buildings or skydiving? Whatever. But he was a gambler. And he was bright. But when it got to the point where his own party came and said, listen, you're going to be impeached, he finally folded his tent, you know, you guys are going to miss me and everything else. He walked off with his victory signs, a la Churchill, when he left and he resigned after he set up his deal that anything that would happen, that the vice president taking over would pardon him if needed. At least we got him out of there. I wouldn't be surprised if Trump got to the right point that he might say, you know what, I don't need this. He's told us he's given up billions of dollars that he would have made if he wasn't here, earning this little piddling $400,000 a year, which he doesn't take. Why would he take when he's already redirected hundreds of millions into his own resorts that are in his pocket? So that's what I mean by Trump does a Nixon. He may bow out and just make his little deal. And, you know, as I said, he can open a little show, have his followers pay 10 bucks a month, and he can make himself close to $500 million a year without too much trouble. Wisconsin primary, there's been all this up and back. It's due to be, I believe, the 7th. So we're almost there. It's going to be this Tuesday. Luckily, they've opened a little bit more of the mail-in, the voting, and the rest of it. They don't want to cooperate and move their primary further back. Hey, you got people who don't give a crap about cooperating. They feel they'll do whatever benefits them. There's been more male in and arrested, and they've said, in case you haven't heard, anybody who's out there, anybody you know, as long as it's, I believe, postmarked by the 7th of April, they'll be counting the mail coming in up to the 13th, I believe, is the date they put out there. So that's the Wisconsin primary. On April 2nd, and this made me laugh like crazy, Donald Trump had no problem ordering 100,000 body bags. Is this, again, the man capturing the market so he makes sure that they're available? Now, you have to put this together with the other story where Jared came out from the background. And again, Jared and Ivanka have been hardworking. That's why we don't see them in the background while we're paying them. And just like Trump doesn't need the money, neither do they. They have hundreds of millions of dollars of assets, but they get paid a couple of $100,000 a year that, as far as I know, they're not turning back to the Treasury. But in the meantime, they're using the influence to expand their trademarks and other things while we stupidly sit around and accept that they're in there. I guess he wants to groom them so he could say, hey, she and he have been helpful. Maybe we're going to run them after he's done, if he does win a second term. So he keeps a dynasty. The more he keeps control of the government, the more he keeps control of that cookie jar, our money. So he ordered 100,000 body bags. Jared said the other day, the strategic reserve from the federal government is stuff that we don't necessarily give to the states. We put it into the supply chain. Excuse me? I'll talk about it later, but basically think about it. The money the federal government spends is our money, okay? When they're spending our money and they're giving us our money back because we need it now to survive and live so the economy doesn't totally fall apart and people could at least buy food and pay some bills. And talk about giving us some of our money back that we gave into the Treasury. I'll hit one later that it'll make more sense to you when you realize there was something buried in this bill for the top 1% that in that tax bill in 2017 got enormous benefits. They got another one buried in this bill. I will explain it later. So the body bags, according to Jarrett, since they're our strategic reserve, they may put it back in a supply line, meaning they'll hand it to companies to sell to us when we have to put dead bodies in them. Who knows? I wouldn't put it past them. Anything that puts money in their pocket. Dr. Calvin's son, if you're watching the interviews that are happening, because, you know, you're not going to the movies and other things, you may run out of shows that you're catching up on the internet and the rest of it, or streaming. Dr. Calvin's son was one of the many people who've been interviewed. This is a young New Yorker who's, I guess, of Oriental descent by the family name, who's an emergency room doctor who goes wherever they need him in New York. So he kind of gets cold and goes there to serve and help. And we'll get into this thing about the emergency room, what's going on. There's nothing more service to the country than all these people that we never thought about, who every day are working in hospitals, but now we know they're working. They're working and almost never stopping. And the load gets bigger every day. So Dr. Calvin's son was talking about what goes on because he's been in many emergency rooms around the city. And we know New York is one of the hottest places with the coronavirus and the deaths right now. Other people will catch up. Cuomo's explained it. I love how Andrew does a great job sitting there giving you nothing but facts, simple examples that anybody could relate to. So now Dr. Calvin's son, you could look him up on the internet. He's an ER physician, and he's been working his butt off also 10, 12-hour days at least at many different emergency rooms around the city. Let's look at this. Trump has had a hard time when we asked him about the DPA, the Defense Production Act, put in Korea so that the commander-in-chief can take over and put us on a more wartime footing when an emergency happens. Doesn't have to be a war. This is like a war. We're fighting an alien invader. So that act gives him the ability to go out there and tell plants, look, we need you to do this, we need you to do that. It's life and death. It's been described at that. We can see the deaths if you follow the numbers. Trump has said, well, I put the act in, but I just have to wave it at them. Tell them, if you don't do what I want, I'm going to invoke it. So a lot of people who follow his rhetoric will say, well, yeah, he's using it to force them to do it. No, we don't need to play the game that I'm going to force you to do it. You won't be able to do your normal stuff, blah, 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 blah. No, do it. That's your job. That's what the act was created for. So mobilization of the military to help us with what we needed, which he was really slow to do, where he'll now tell you, oh, we built all these beds in the Javits Center and here, and we're doing it here and there. It took twisting his arm a lot. And he tells you, hey, I'm a wartime president. He likes wearing all these cute hats as long as he can sell the hats. Think about when we had those children, women, children, and husbands or uncles or whatever, coming up from Central America to seek asylum in the U.S. He called it an invasion. People with blistered feet, no weapons, women and children, and he used them again for detention. But he mobilized quickly, if you think about it, when he wanted to put troops on the southern border. He sent troops onto American soil when we have a problem with that legally, usually. So we don't always put them unless there's an emergency, but he declared it an emergency. We were being invaded by these people that we could see that were not dangerous. Then he was locking them up and giving companies contracts so that they put up tents and took care of them, separating families. We don't have to go over it, but again, it was another way for him to spend money that would end up putting money back in his pocket. So mobilization, the military, he was slow in doing stuff for all of these people dying or what's happening and not paying attention to the scientists who are around him telling him what's going on, saying, I didn't realize, you know, and it's going to all disappear. Like I said, look up Priority USA. The latest commercial has him talking. It couldn't be clearer about what he said, no matter how he denies it and where we are. And then at the end, I take no responsibility. So he could mobilize the military when he has a purpose to do that suits him, but not when we have a purpose that will save lives and take care of us, the citizens. Mobilizing the Navy for drug trafficking. Look, we have groups of people that are doing drug trafficking and watching our borders and the Coast Guard's out there. They haven't stopped. This is part of what we do, whether we watch them or not. We're not distracted. They do their job. That's their duty. We have airplanes that fly and patrol our borders and groups that do it. But he made a big show of it last week because he wanted to distract from everything else and show you that he can walk and chew gum. Even though Mitch McConnell says, hey, the impeachment made it hard for him to concentrate on the coronavirus, even though he said, Mitch, you're wrong. And he proved it by showing you this big task force, a lot of naval things and warships. Look it up, the mobilization, because Venezuela indicted Maduro, so he decided there was another drug bust. He sent a ton of our naval assets, not where we need it as a country while we have sick people, and mobilizing our military to help us, but to make a big show of how he's taking care of the drug traffic. Yeah. Staging again. This is the man. There's a term. Growing up in New York City, being Jewish, and I'm not Orthodox nor conservative or reform. I'm Jewish. I follow my laws and my holidays. I love God, no matter what we or anybody else calls God. But the cute thing about New York, not only do we shorten names and say, hey, you know, we truncate everything. We'll call you A or Al. I mean, I'm Alan. Nobody ever started calling me Al for some odd reason. I've always been Alan to almost everybody, even on the streets, where generally I'd be Al or A or something. We don't waste time in New York. We shorten everything. We've got a lot of Yiddish words that crawled into the dictionary because of it being a big city with millions of people who travel all over the world, and certain things like bagels, which is not uniquely a Jewish food, but it is a European thing that came with a lot of Jewish people, that we opened a lot of bagel bakeries in the old days before they became an in thing. And hey, if I took Einstein's formula for my logo, why not go to Einstein's Bagel and have some? But bagels became ubiquitous in the case that they're sold in all kinds of supermarkets throughout the country, whether you're Jewish or not. People find it's a cool bread to eat, whatever. But a lot of terms, just like other terms that have come in our language from other languages. Yiddish, which is considered to be a bastard language because it's an amalgamation of probably 70% of old High German, and then a mix of some Russian and the other stuff, wherever my people came from, all kinds of countries. There's a term. The term is Mensch. Mensch, when you look it up, and it's M-E-N, men, and then S-C-H. If you look it up, you got time, go on the internet. It comes from the German term that I'm not going to try and pronounce. I'll probably mispronounce it. But the idea is that a Mensch is a human being in its simplicity as a definition, but it's a human being with certain qualities, the colloquial use of the word. And it means someone who's a good person. Good person, even stronger than that, the definition when you look it up in the rest, is someone who has responsibility, rights, empathetic, sympathetic, whatever you want to call it. So a Mensch, and this is a time when you see it. A lot of these people who are going out of their way to help neighbors, to deliver foods, to go out there and do things, to help the elderly. And sometimes it's the elderly helping the elderly, but they're in good shape and they know their friends are out there. So when you have a serious time is when you see the character of a person. And I have to say, I'm really, really happy from what I've seen from people close to me and around me that I don't throw the term Mensch around lightly. When it's a baby, you know, maybe a grandmother's going to pinch your cheeks and call you one, but she won't call you that till you grow up unless you're really a good person and behave well. And I don't mean sit straight and quiet, but do things that help people. You know, you're a good member of society. So Mensch, people near and dear to me, there was something I always joke, like I've said before, we only have 26 letters in our alphabet and over a million words in our language. So when we truncate it to a couple of letters, because we like to keep it simple, when I grew up, one of the products, their ad was, the product was an additive to your gas tank to make your engine run better so you can go faster or something. And it was STP, three letters. And STP was the Racer's Edge, was their line. And I used to joke years later, I used it because a lot of people would get in the middle and stir things up. So I said, STP, to me, stands for stir the pot. But I had someone who recently used it another way, and it was kind of cool. And I'll share it with you. It's share the pain. Let me put it in context. Back in the Great Depression and other times, people who were more of a mensch quality, who cared about other people. When you run out of money and your business closes, you know, you'd say, well, I can't afford to keep you on. I'm going to have to fire everybody. During the Depression, you had a lot of people who were mensch-like, where they said, well, these people have families. I may not be able to pay them what I did before, but I'm going to go to them and say, listen, if you guys will take a cut, instead of being out of work and be on a soup line and your family is trying to figure out where they're going to get their meal from, how about if I cut your pay and I'm cutting my own pay? And these are CEOs or executives sometimes who form their own company. I believe if you read the history of Hershey, when he built his town and built his chocolate bars and made tons of money, he cared about the people who worked for him. And I believe he was one of these people who during the Depression, and I ran into a lot of teachers who were much older than I was when I was doing my graduate and undergraduate work, who told me about people they worked for who kept people employed but paid them a proportionate share of their salary when they otherwise wouldn't have any place to work. When, like they said, it's hard to even get through to unemployment to collect a check. You don't know when they're going to run out of funds. That's why that $2 trillion bill put money in there for that. So STP, the more modern version of it, and I thank someone for not just coming up with that, but it was a cool way of saying, I know how to be nice to people. Share the pain. Why should they bear it all by me firing them all? Let's keep them on if they agree to a salary cut, and I'll cut my own salary. So that's what humans are all about. That's what a mensch is all about. So let's keep that word in mind, guys. It's like a congressional medal of human being. Lisa Sarnick, what is the date for ordering the body bags? It was April 2nd, I believe, was the date that he ordered 100,000 body bags, Lisa. Group chat, I'm saddened by the Navy captain being fired for sharing his concerns regarding COVID-19. One of the 30-odd bullet points I had, if I read them all, I'd be done with the hour, was this Navy captain. I've tried to explain to people, I am a military person. I served my country. I could have gone in for any kind of training if I wanted to stay in. I did quite well on their tests and stuff. I just missed the activity of my New York. But I can tell you, understand this. The vessel that this guy was on and was captain of is a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. So this is not an old aircraft carrier. This is one of our new nuclear-powered aircraft carriers. When you become a captain of something like that, you've got all kinds of background in science and understanding. You may not fix and take care of the reactor that's in that boat, but you know the people who are in there. And generally, you know your crew. You've served on different boats. For them to put, this is a piece of armament. This is not a rifle. This is a major piece of armament that has planes and helicopters and rockets and missiles, okay? Had close to, I believe, 4,000 crew on this thing. Now, the reason for that is there's a lot to take care of on this thing. It's complex, but they're all trained. They're all interactive. As a person, if I leave my unit when I retire, and they all clap because they're sad to see me go, and they wish me well, which happened when the captain left his boat yesterday, I believe. Trump took him off. He sent this acting Secretary of the Navy, I believe, out to say, well, you know, he shouldn't have done that. He should have gone through channels. Go do your research. This naval captain went through the channels. That boat, we can't just put any sailor on that boat. The majority of people on that boat are pilots who fly some of the most sophisticated planes, maintenance people who take care of it and the weaponry, people who take care of the nuclear reactor and the rest of it. Yeah, and I'm not belittling them. You need cooks and chefs and people who clean the place. You're a composite group. This captain had a team of thousands of people who respected him, listened to him, and would go into battle with him. Well, he went into battle for them by saying, I've got almost 100 sick people who've tested positive. I don't want to infect the whole boat. Think about it. If that whole nuclear aircraft carrier gets infected enough, it's got to be taken down. We're losing a major piece of armament in defending ourselves in case anything happened. So they get rid of the man? You can't. I'm sure he had a second in command. Our commanders are good enough and smart enough to make sure they got a successor. So if they're killed in battle, they got someone who can take over and run it. A good commander knows that. He doesn't just stand there and say, I'm a genius. I know everything. I don't need anybody. That's a sophisticated piece of weaponry that the planes on there could cost $1 billion a piece. So you got a multi-billion dollar investment in the people and the planes and this war machine that we got rid of the guy who runs it. They didn't throw him out of the military, they reassigned him. Stupidity. He said, I want to cure my crew. I want to keep this thing active and working. I hope they do a good inquiry and people listen to the inquiry. Anyway, a commander of a ship like that doesn't get to be a commander by accident. He doesn't get put in there because he learned how to do sailing in the summertime at his mansion. Anyway, we should be proud of these people who've gotten to that level of competence to be in charge of a nuclear aircraft carrier with the thousands of people and $1 billion of weaponry that protect us. So, thank you about that, but it is sad to see. That's another reason why, as I said, what have we got to lose? The storyteller in chief. That's my subtitle for today. Retired Americans. Last week I talked about barn, because I talked about the idea of barn raising when we first came here and we grouped together and we helped each other. If somebody had to put their house together, the whole community helped build it. If it burnt down, we all helped fix it and rebuild it. And I said, barn, easy word to remember, B-A-R-N. I said, let's just use that, just like I use this. From the beginning of my podcast, I had this sign here. Everybody's seen it, M-I-H. M-I-H, okay? As I said, 26 letters. For me, this was put here by me. It stands for make it happen. We have always made things happen when we work together, when we understand why we're doing something, when people are honest with us and tell us facts. We don't mind even throwing our life on the line. That's what this country is about. Not just being a millionaire or a billionaire, but having the freedom to live and move around now that we're not able to do it and we're not getting back to it too fast because he's lying to you that it's going to be over soon. It ain't going to be over soon. And please, if he says you can go out and go to big parties and get together, wait till the scientists tell you so. Anyhow, so make it happen. BARN, I said, it was a simple acronym. It stands for, in this case, be American, react nationally. Nationally meaning not like I'm nationalistic, I hate other countries, but react with your teammates, your fellow Americans, no matter what they look like or sound like. Because I hate to say it, we are a team. This is an incident that is showing us that we need everybody. And a lot of them are dying while they're trying to help our country survive this alien invasion. Let's not just applaud them, which is what they've been doing near some of the hospitals, I think, in New York at 7 at night. I just love it. It's where they're all coming to the window and saying, yes, we're behind you. That's the American spirit. Let's never lose it. And now we have something that's reminding us we're a country. We're all Americans, period. It's not an election. It's our way of life, surviving and continuing to enjoy it. So, share the pain. Trauma ops training. I had that on my next on the list, and I'm running out of time, but I want to hit this one. Everybody's heard the term PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Back in the old days in World War II, World War I, other battles, they would call it that you're shell-shocked. They would say that what you have is battle fatigue. You know, when you're on the front lines and you're fighting for months on end, for years, you're under fire, you get resupplied, but you're in the military. You're there to fight, and you're going to fight, and maybe every day you're fighting. You don't know when it's going to end, but you want it to end. The wars in Afghanistan and Iraq are different. There's a lot of politics involved. We can get into the story of whether or not we should have gone there to begin with or handled it differently. It doesn't matter. Yeah, they're the longest wars because it's still technically a war. But again, we have for our own benefit, not just the countries where we are, we have major air bases in Germany, in the Philippines, in Turkey. World War II is over. Why are these major bases there? Why do we have nuclear weapons in Turkey, okay? Because it's better for us if we have to fight something. So yeah, Afghanistan, Iraq, we move out of there. China's already made a deal with the money they've earned and the progress they've made on all of the American greed pushing manufacturing over to them. How do we all like it when we keep hearing that we're not even making masks here? We got to ask them, and they're worrying that they've got other clients who are offering them a better price. PTSD, the stress of being on the battle. Police and fire do that every day. So they need that psychological help. Garbage men who pick up our garbage so we have don't end up with health conditions, rats running around our streets. People don't think about it. I've always understood that. That if garbage wasn't picked up in a decent-sized city or any place, eventually you'll have vermin growing out of it, running at it, and you'll have to deal with vermin or pestilence because we don't have a system that keeps us clean and sanitary. So this is bringing to the fore of how many people in our society, and it's the majority of them, are working day-to-day, a waiter or a waitress, even working in a cafe, dishwashers, making sure the dishes are clean so we don't get sick when we order food in a diner or something. Everybody is part of this whole that we call America and the world. I've traveled, I've seen people do it, cruder, different ways, different times that they're progressing through. They're not as modern as we are. Maybe they're ahead of us. We have to understand that we're all in this together. We're not hiding in some little corner where we could disregard everybody else. You don't have to live with them. You don't have to talk to them. You may not enjoy them that much, but you know what? You can keep your distance even when it isn't the coronavirus and allow people to live their life knowing that together we're all making our way of living happen. All of us. So, when you call trauma, think about, I've known people, I knew a very highly skilled nurse who spent part of her career as a trauma nurse in an operating room, meaning every day she was going to be in there in a major city where accidents happened all the time and they were always under the gun, like they were in the middle of a battle, like a MASH unit on TV. Now think about it. Every hospital in New York and a lot of other places as it gets there are going into a battle every day. They almost can't stop to change their uniform. They just have to keep fighting to preserve life. So I'm running out of time, but trauma, we're gonna have a lot of people. Oh, Liz again, why would the federal government let Trump fire the Navy captain? Trump again has told us that he's the president, and according to the amendments, he believes he could do whatever the hell he wants. And again, with the Senate being Republican and Mitch McConnell doing the quid pro quo, you give me the judges, I'll give you the bills that you want. They're trading off with each other. They're not taking care of us. They're taking care of their own needs. Trump, let me do what I want. Mitch saying, let me do what I want. So they fired the guy. There's going to be an investigation. You're going to hear people testify under oath. Then they're going to say, well, that wasn't real. It was real. They should not have. They didn't fire him. They took him off the ship. They transferred him. The man should be controlling that ship. He was brave enough to talk up for his people, our asset that he runs. Almost out of time. Unemployment. We'll get through it. We'll deal with it. You're going to have numbers. As I said, when the stock market started going down, Trump, who talked like he owned the stock market, he's full of shit because if he owned it, why can't he control it so it wasn't going down? All the gains that happened from when Obama handed him the government disappeared. So you've had some up and down. I'm almost done. I've got much more. I'll talk about it. Stockpile, I hit it before. Refrigerated trucks, you'll see them on TV. They're putting them down. I'm almost off. But they put them out there because they don't want to create another public health hazard by not keeping these dead bodies refrigerated that the morgue can't process that fast. So people, Let's keep applauding everybody who's out there and the retired people who are coming out and volunteering to work in these hospitals. And there have been at least 20,000 who already said they're going to New York. And Cuomo's right, let's deal with it and keep going across the country like any other natural disaster we deal with. Let's applaud all of them. We're going to get through this. We don't have another planet to head toward. We will survive it, and we'll be the better for it, because now we know what life is worth. Okay? Take care of each other. Keep your distance. Stay at home. Spend this time reading and learning, so that when you go back, if you run out of time, you'll have a lot more knowledge to deal with, and you have time to look up who said what and what it really means. Thank you all for listening. Share this with anybody. I would appreciate it. Thanks again for listening.